Good morning, everyone. So first of all, I would like to thank the organizer for inviting me to present my work in this conference. So in the last few days, there have been So in the last few days, I have been enjoying many talks on NOS, but unfortunately, my talk today is not about NOS, so I hope that I'm not disappointing anyone. my talk is trying to give you a simple explanation about the structure and motif of biomolecules. And as you can see here, that I will try to use a two model to explain the structure and motif of biomolecules. And this is the outline of my talk. First, I will give a brief description of the tube model, and then I will discuss the design of the flexible tube in the solvent. And if time permits, I will discuss our result of the refined tube model of proteins. So we know that biomolecules adopt very beautiful structural motifs like the double helix of DNA, and alpha helix and beta sheet in proteins. As this structural motif occur almost in on every protein and every DNA, despite the difference in the sequence of protein or DNA. And one can ask the question, why the secondary structures? And we know that the hydrogen bonding are very important. The analysis of hydrogen bonding has led to the discovery of structure of DNA and also the secondary structure of proteins. And we know about the work about the sterics study by Ramachandran that also that in the phi side plane, there are two regions corresponding to the alpha helix and to the beta sheet. And also the hydrophobicity is also very important in proteins that makes the protein conformation compact. And there have been studies about the topological aspect of protein, that the structure of the structure that contain that have a high secondary content are highly desirable and have large dynamical accessibility. And this leads to the question whether the protein secondary structure arise due to some evolutionary pressure. Okay, so all these suggestions are very interesting, but we was thinking that maybe the origin of secondary structure arise due to some very simple, there could be some very simple answer to this question rooted in the symmetry. And what we learned from the condensed matter physics is that the phase of matter is determined by a few ingredients, such as the symmetry of constituent molecules and some microscopic parameters like temperature and pressure. And very good example are liquid crystal. The liquid crystal phases exist between is a temperature window between the crystal phase and the liquid phase, and it exhibits some degree of ordering of the molecules like here. It is in order for the liquid crystal phases to exist, it's very important that the liquid crystalline molecule must be anisotropic. And it seems to be that it does not depend on the atomic detail of the molecule. In fact, we can have different similar, very similar liquid crystal from different kind of molecules. So this example of liquid crystal led us to a question. So let's forget about the complexity of proteins and DNA, and we can ask question: biomolecules chain of sphere or chain of coils? So in the first case, the winding block has a spherical symmetry, and in another case that we have the uniaxial symmetry of the coils. And in the continuum limit, the chain of coils will become a two. So let's go slowly. First, we examine whether the biomolecules are chain of sphere. First, let's consider the non-overlap sphere, and the study have shown that with for homopolymer with simple pairwise interaction, there's a low temperature phases are semi-crystalline or disordered global, and we don't see any regular structure like alpha helix or beta sheet. And however, for overlap sphere, there was a paper by Mashi, Vaquez, and Liu in PRL just in 2006, showing that for homopolymer with sufficient overlap between the consecutive bits, then the helix can be the ground state. Okay, but we can note that since the consecutive bit overlap, it breaks the symmetry of the sphere, and this kind of chain is quite similar to a tube. So the idea that biomolecules such as protein and DNA are tube-like object was first appeared in this paper in Nature by Amos Maritain and co-workers. And let's consider the a box, and we can ask how we can pack a tube most efficiently in this box. And it has been shown that the most efficiently packed conformation is a tightly helix. And it also has been shown that the pitch to radius ratio of this optimal helix is very similar to the alpha helix in protein. In fact, we can fit the protein alpha helix by a tube with a radius of about 2.7 angstrom. And similar argument about the packing of DNA also has been pointed out by Andrei Stashak and John Mado, that the DNA structure can be the double helix of DNA can be explained as packing of the two tubes. So in order to do the tube, sorry, should be the tube shell avoidance, it is quite simple. Let's imagine that we have a curve C, and if we inflate the curve C, then we will obtain a tube. And let's say that we want the tube to have the radius delta. Okay, so for every 3 points in this curve, we can define a circle and determine the radius of this circle. And there was a theorem saying that the minimum value of the radius of all possible circles, okay, going through all possible points in the curve C, is larger than equal to delta. So in order to have a self-avoiding tube, then we will require that the the minimum value of all the reduced circle is should be larger than or equal to delta. And there is study about short tube that cell interact. For example, in this study, it has been shown that let's say that we have a tube described by a chain of bits like this, and it satisfies the three body constraint like in the last slide. And let's say that between the bits, the attraction defined by a range R1. So if the distance is less than R1, we have a contact with some energy. And it has been shown that for the attraction range, just barely larger than the tube thickness, then we can find both the helices and planar structure like the beta hairpin here. And this marginally compact phase exists between the compact phase and the swollen phase. So we'll come back later to this picture. Okay, so in the study here, we have to study the discrete tube. So we use the pairwise interaction for the tube. And if we may imagine that the tube is done in the continuum limit, then the number of bits goes to infinity, and then the energy will diverge. So we were thinking what energy function to use in order to study the flexible tube. And there was a very nice study by Sneer and Kamian in Science in 2005. And they study, they consider a tube in a solvent of spherical molecules of finite size. And they compare the free energy for solvation of these two types of conformation, a stretch tube and a tube in the helical conformation. And the mechanism for the compaction of the chain is the depletion effect, that the compaction is due to the increase in entropy. Let's say when the chain is compact, it makes some overlap volume, and this decreases the absolute volume of the chain, and that's why the entropy of the solvent increases, and so this kind of conformation is more favorable in free energy. And they have shown that for some finite and small radius R of the solvent, then the conformation with the lowest free the helical conformation with lowest free energy is an optimal helix with the pitch to radius ratio is equal to 2.51 and so on. And last year there was a paper by Hansen Gus and other in PIL, which study more carefully the solvation of tube. And they show that according to the Hartwig theorem, the free energy for solvation of a three-dimensional object in a solvent contain only four terms. So here V is the volume, A is the accessible area of the object, C is the integrin mean temperature of the on the surface of the object, and x is the integrin Gaussian curvature, and p sigma kappa bar as the coupling constant, which depends on the solvent molecule solvent properties and so on. And the epsilon that depend on the solvent property, the optimum helix or beta sheet, or none of them can be favored. Okay, so it is an extension to the region of the Schneer and Cambrian. And note that when sigma and kappa bar equal to zero, then we have back to this Asakura-Osawa theory that the free net energy is depending only on the absolute volume of the object. And our approach here for the solvent of, solvation of the tube is different, that we assume that P, kappa, and kappa bar are equal to zero, so we consider only the solvation free energy depending on the exposed area of the tube. Okay, so let's assume that we have a flexible tube of length L and radius delta in a solvent of radius R of R sphere, and we will, because the calculation of the exposed area is more computational demanding than the buried area. So we consider the Hamiltonian, which is minus k sol times the buried area of the tube in this solvent. So if k sol is larger than zero, then we have the so-called solvophobic tube that even try to maximize the buried area. The buried area can be calculated by integration over the tube surface by this formula. Okay, then we can do the Monte Carlo simulation to study the behavior of this tube in the solvent. And of course, we cannot study the continuous tube. In order to do the simulation, we have to do the discretization of the tube. And we have checked that it is sufficient to approximate the continuous tube by a set of points with the spacing equal to delta half, where delta is the radius of the tube. And we have checked the region with b equal to delta over 4. Okay, then we can do the Monte Carlo simulation with the Metropolis algorithm and the standard pivot and crankshaft move. And we use multiple simulated annealing for finding the ground state. And these are the ground state that we obtain. So for single tube, we can obtain the kind of sudden structure, and we obtain the helix and a double helix, but it connected and like this. And for multiple tubes, we obtain double helix, triple helix, and for more tubes, then we can have this kind of structure. And it is expected that for infinite number of tubes, we obtain the Abrikosov flux like lattice. So, okay, so we do not obtain the planar beta sheet in this case. So, what was wrong? So, what was missing in the tube model? So, we were guessing that maybe the Bayesian symmetry is needed, because we know that the protein have a side chain, and if we approximate the backbone by the tube, then the side chain are sticking out, and it lead to some vitality of the soup. And the second guess is that it could be the discreteness of the soup that lead to the plana sweet. Because we observe the zigzag pattern in the bitter sheet. Okay, so we try to examine about the biaxiality. So we try to do it in a minimal way that we assume that the soup. Okay, so this is the cross section of the soup, and we assume that some part of the soup is solvophobic. It means that it likes to be in contact with the solvent, whereas the rest is solvophobic. Means that it likes to be hidden from the solvent. And the width of this strip is the angular width of this strip is 2 theta 1, and it should be found on the opposite direction of the normal direction. And we come up with a Hamiltonian like this. Okay. So for the C equal to 0, then we have the solvophobic case, like previously shown. And for C larger than 0, then we have a mixed solvophobic tube. Okay, so we can study the ground state for this system. And for the case with C equal to 5 and delta 1 equal to pi over 6, and the R is a reduced solvent equal to 0.2 delta, then we obtain this conformation. Okay, for the single tube, and we spin obtain the helix. And for several tubes, then we obtain four tubes. In this case, we obtain the this structure that the helix are sitting on each other. So it doesn't like to form a structure like in the case of a solvophobic tube. And for more tubes, then this kind of conformation is more favorable, that we see that the tubes are arranged in a planar structure like in the beta sheet. So we have shown that with the biaxiality, then the helix formation is enhanced. Okay. Okay, we can obtain the helix for a longer tube than for the solvophobic case. And the planar sheet can also be observed. Okay, so how about the discrete tubes? So we have shown that for the discrete tubes with the attraction, then we can obtain the helix and also planar beta hairpin in this case. And we have done also more careful simulation for this case for three chains, and we found that we can find two kind of planar arrangement like here. Okay, so in this case the bit spacing is quite close to the tube radius, and that's why it is a regime of the discrete tube. And however, if we look at the beta sheet, a real protein beta sheet, then we see the zigzag, which is in perpendicular to the sheet plane. And in this case, the first one, the zigzag here is on the plane. Okay. So we are trying to understand that, and for example, if we take this structure and we let's say that we have the red sphere as the center of the C and O bond, and the blue sphere as between the center of N H bond, then for the beta sheet show here, we can obtain also planar structure like in this case. And here's the green line as a V2 and hydrogen bond. So somehow we can see that this kind of structure can be observed in the beta sheet by assuming that the mid now are not C alpha, but the center of this bond. Okay, this result was published in PNAS together with John Barnava, John Madoff, Amos Maritan, Chiara Poletto, Andrei Stashak, and Antonio Trovato in 2007. Now I would like to present our result on the refined tube model. Okay, so let's say that we have a tube and we will introduce some interaction for this tube. We consider only the discrete tube, okay? And first we have the energy function contains three terms, the bending energy, the hydrophobic energy, and the hydrogen bond energy. So when the tube is bent, we have some penalty equal to ER, and we have for the hydrophobic interaction, we have a square one potential with the depth equal to EW. And for hydrogen bond, it is also very important. And we introduce the hydrogen bond interaction based on the analysis of the PDB structure. So here is a geometrical rule for the hydrogen bond that we consider the local hydrogen bond and non-local hydrogen bond. And these are the set. Okay, so for two amino acids, we can study the correlation between the reference frame between these two. And we can derive the geometric control for the hydrogen bond. And for this model, we study the phase, the ground state phase diagram for homopolymer with n equal to 24. And what we found is that between the swollen phase, for large ER and EW, and the compact phase for small ER and small EW, we found a marginally compact phase with protein-like structure like single helix, double helix, and two kind of beta sheet, a beta helix. Yeah. So note that in both the swollen phase and compact phase, we have many structures. And the structure have no secondary content, whereas in the marginally compact phase we have protein-like structure, and we have few structures. This is a free energy landscape for the homopolymer of 24 bits, and we found that for the temperature equal to Tf, we have three minimum in the free energy landscape, that the lowest minimum correspond to a single helix, when we also have a minimum correspond to the beta sheet. Yeah. And this is the marginally compact phase of homopolymer with 48 residues, that we have a much richer spectrum of structures shown here. And this picture shows the degeneracy of the minima, that we take the 100 lowest energy minima and we study the deviation of the energy. And we found that in the region of the marginally compact phase, the degeneracy is much lower than in the swollen or compact phase. Okay, and this is the radius of generation and the secondary content of this minima, and we found that in the marginally compact structure, the secondary content is quite high. then we attempt to try to design proteins that fold to specific structure. And we have shown that by using just two kinds of amino acids, H and P, we can design the sequences that fold to this specific structure. And these are the PDB structures that are similar to the design, our design sequence. So with the troop model, it is relatively easy to design the sequences. And these are the free energy landscape for the three guys that I have shown, that we still cannot distinguish between the there are two structures that are little image of each other, and also here. And this is a structure of the so-called repeated proteins, and we can obtain a similar structure in our model by studying this sequence. And what happened when you have many chains? For homo polymer with five chains, then we, if we do the Monte Carlo simulation, then we can obtain this kind of structure. And for 10 chains, we have seen this. And these are very similar to the amyloid fibril found by here for insulin. And also, if we, let's say we have a sequence that folds to the three helix bundle, and we cut this protein into six equal pieces, and each of them will fold into a helix when they are isolated, but when they are found together, then they fold to this kind of beta helix structure, and they're similar to it is similar to the beta helix found in real proteins. So so it was with the design. So now we ask whether the troop model can predict the protein structure. Actually, with simple ER and the HP interaction, we have poor result. Okay. So we were trying to have a more refined potential by replace ER with the local potential. And for consecutive bits with the type A here and type B here, we can have 24 different states. So R can be a bended state, and B can or extended, and B can be also in a bended conformation or extended. And we have the bin also for phi, which is the dihedral angle. And we can derive the potential for this for every pair of amino acid. We can derive from the PDB structure, the real PDB structure. And if we use this potential to fold real protein sequences, then we can obtain this result. This is the protein G domain that has a single helix shifting on the beta sheet. And what we obtain is the lowest energy decoy in our simulation is this structure, which are very similar. Okay, you can see that the beta hairpin here have a different arrangement than here. That's why the arms beam is quite large. And here are the folding of protein A, which is a three helix bundle, and we got the lowest energy decoy, which has similar topology, and the MSD is 4.8 angstrom. And here are the results for the ribosomal protein L7. We have obtained a also similar structure to synaptic state with beta strand, and then we have the helix, correct? And then also this helix is correct, but the rest is not correct. Okay, and this is the result for the DNA binding protein. And this is for a super case of the beta alpha motif. And since this is a short protein, we obtain the quite good agreement with the native state. So I come now to the conclusion is that common structural motif of protein and DNA. We have shown that our study have shown that they arise due to the tube symmetry of the chain molecules, and the planar sheet may arise due to the basality or the discreteness of the tube. And our study suggests that protein structure lies in the marginally compact phase of a tube that is close to the swollen phase, and that has a few structure, and each structure has a large margin of attraction, and there is a tendency of many chains to form amyloid. And our work also, we have also a hypothesis that the symmetry and geometry disturbs the free energy landscape of proteins, that the protein sequence choose a native structure from a fixed menu of folds. I missed some slide. So there have been a contribution of many people for quite a long time, and I just list here all the people have been working on the tube model, and the Train Banova is at Penn State University, and Amos Maritan is Padova, and we have also Davide and Kristen and Andrea here. Okay, and I would like to thank the Vietnam Education Foundation for support of my stay at Penn State University. Okay. Thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, we've got time for some questions.
Hi, Wang. So I was asking, so when you say that when you have the solvation model, mm-hmm. you do not find the planar structure with a simple model, and then, okay, you say biaxiality or discreteness can lead to planar structure. So discreteness, I understood. Can you go back to the solvation?
Yes.
So mixed, because you say that biaxiality is connected somehow to mixed solvation, but I couldn't quite see. So if you could just discuss this again, yeah?
Okay.
Yeah, so this C parameter would be?
Okay, so we have the... So this C parameter describes the coupling of this part to the solvent.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay. So if, let's say that when this part is exposed to the solvent, then it will have some negative energy. And you can see that here the slide of the solvophilic is finding here that it is exposed to the solvent, where the buried as a solvophobic part are buried inside. Okay. And for many tubes, then we obtain this planar structure.
Okay, now let's have this. Cheers. Yeah.
And how about membrane proteins? Have you had an idea if this kind of model could be used to predict something about membrane proteins?
Probably yes. Actually, we I mean that's our modeling of protein is quite good, and you can use it to study the membrane proteins.
I have a couple of questions about your predictions.
Yes.
It looked from the pictures that you now introduce chirality into the predictions. Is that right?
Excuse me? Sorry.
It looked as if you've introduced chirality into the
chirality.
Predicted models.
Yes. Actually, I forgot to say that for the local hydrogen bond that we have introduced the chirality. That we accept only the local hydrogen bond with produce the correct chirality of the helices. Mm-hmm.
And also, in terms of which predictions are right and which ones are wrong,
yeah.
Do you find that your method has a bias towards beta strands that lie adjacent in the sheet, and you'd have difficulty with non-local interactions?
Sorry, I did not get your
question. I would guess your method is biased towards local interactions in the beta sheet.
Yes.
Strands lie side by side.
Yes.
Do you predict any that don't have strands lying side by side?
Yeah, actually in real protein you can see that there are some loop like this, okay, but in our prediction, it seems that we have more secondary structure constraints that, for example, it could be a loop here, but here we have see that it try to form a strand leadership. I think that in order to have a good prediction, we have to increase the number of parameters, and the detail will matter a lot.
Just a general question. If you increase a lot of this parameter, how different is this tube approach in terms of protein structure prediction from the ordinary approach of just using chains? Because this is a tube model approach, right?
Yes, right.
So when you dress it up with a lot of parameter, it may sort of you seem to be sort of going back to sort of ordinary approach of using ball and sticks. Is that a fair comment?
I think that's a fair comment. I think the two models have captured the basic property of proteins, but in order to do the prediction, we have to include a lot of details. And
So you're effectively going back to a ball and stick kind of model, so the usual kind of model, in a way.
Do you mean the Gold model?
Not Gold model. I mean in terms of not the cube representation, but the usual representation of chemical bonds and atoms and so on, right? So you're sort of gradually reverting back to that.
yeah, but it would be much easier. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, well, let's thank our speaker. Our next speaker is Surya Ghosh from the Indian Institute of Technology in Bombay. He'll speak on statistical properties of intrinsically curved polymers.
I am going to talk about statistical properties of intrinsically curved polymer. So many biopolymers have been found to possess intrinsic curvature. In animal cells, in eukaryotic cell, tubulin protofilaments, and also in prokaryotic cells, the FTLZ, plays the main key role in prokaryotic cell division, has the intrinsic curvature. This is the picture of FTLZ polymer. This is the AFM picture. From this picture, we can see that this type of polymers has an intrinsic radius of curvature. So our main aim is to develop a general model which can describe the intrinsically curved polymer. So we model intrinsic like this, which has an intrinsic radius of curvature R naught. And the random curvature is the basic definition. So the like semi-flexible polymer, the in the ground state, the polymer is remain in the straight configuration. Any configuration other than this will require energy. But in this type of polymer, this polymer try to keep this intrinsic radius of curvature throughout the length. So this is ground state configuration, and any configuration other than this requires more energy. So the Hamiltonian we write like this. So this R naught is the intrinsic radius of curvature. Without this term, this Hamiltonian is the same as one light chain or semi-flexible polymer. So when this random curvature is equals to this, the Hamiltonian goes to zero. In the discrete model, say if we think about this whole length as n number of bond vectors represented, so the discrete Hamiltonian will look like this, where total number of n monomers. So first we have calculated the effective persistent length, means the effect in the there is intrinsic persistent length and intrinsic radius of curvature. Due to effect of this, what is the effective persistent length in 3D? The definition of effective persistent length is this, and this is the correlation between in a distance r. In 3D, as my Hamiltonian has a near neighbor interaction, so I can write the correlation between I and K as a nearest neighbor interaction. So my effective persistent length is only function of the nearest neighbor interaction. So my nearest neighbor interaction is defined like this. So my main intention is to calculate the nearest neighbor correlation function to calculate the effective LP. So this is my effective persistent length. And this is the exact calculation. We did it analytically. So if we scale by LP, we get this expression for effective LP. There are two non-dimensional quantity y and y1, just to simplify the whole expression. If we plot this effective LP as a function of r and n, r is the radius of curvature and n is the number of bonds. So the plots look like this. This is a this is the varies as r and n. So you can look at this saturated to 1. That means as I scaled by LP, then as I increase the r, the effective LP goes to LP as you see in 1. This is in both the region where I have changed the LP by L from 0.2 to 10. This is in 3D, but correlation function is 2D is also requires a special attention, because most of the curved polymer experimentally has been found in 2D mica sheet. So we also have calculated the effective correlation function in 2D. So the 2D correlation function is defined like this. In 2D, the angle between I and I plus 1 can be easily calculated. If you consider the sine of the angle, so it is the sum of the angles. So 2D correlation function, the same angle means the same radius of curvature can move the polymer in either side. So if we just integrate it from over theta, so we get it decay behavior. But if we allow one preferred direction of curvature, we allow theta equal to theta naught, not theta equal to minus theta naught, so then we will get this type of exact analytical expression. And in the continuum limit, this correlation function looks like this, and this shows the oscillating behavior. So this is about the 2D correlation function. And after that, we have calculated the probability distribution function of the end-to-end vector numerically. We use transfer matrix method and Monte Carlo techniques to calculate the probability distribution function. So we define the probability distribution function this way: integrated over the all bond vectors, and the summation over all bond vectors is minus the end-to-end distance. To calculate P of R, we have calculated P of Z. So P of Z is the probability distribution function of the polymer at a given Z plane. And now after that, this mathematical step, I don't have much time to explain all this. We eventually get the P of R. So I can summarize the whole thing like this. ZF is the generating function. Using transfer matrix method, if we calculate the Z of F, from Z of F, we can calculate P of F. And by inverse Fourier transform going to imaginary F, we can calculate P of Z. And from P of Z, we can calculate P of R using tomographic techniques. So, using Monte Carlo techniques, we can generate the configuration. This is my random walk, and this is my semi-flexible polymer with high LP. LP equals to L, so that looks like a straight rod. But the same configuration, the same LP and L value, if we want to give the intrinsically curved effect, if we want to see the intrinsically curved effect, this polymer looks like this. So the probability distribution function, so this blue one is freely jointed, means the random walk. A probability distribution function, and the dots are semi-flexible, and these three curves are intrinsically curved polymer. So you can see that at very high L, this scaled by L, so at very very high R, the probability distribution function for intrinsically curved polymer is matches with worm-like chain. That means the intrinsically curvature effect is gone. But due to this curvature effect, we have some intermediate probability distribution, and the curvature effect keeps the move towards the left of the Gaussian also. But we have also got a double hump structure in P of R, means in a particular direction, if we want to see what is the how the probability distribution looks like, the vector R. So this looks like this. This plot is intrinsically curved polymer and looks similar to WLC model. We have a double hump structure for a narrow range of L by LP. So this shows the competition between entropic energy and the curvature energy, bending energy. At high radius of curvature, we have taken the high radius of curvature. So at high radius of curvature, we got a curve similar like WLC. But taking any L by LP, say we have taken just this L by LP, and we varies the radius of curvature, and we got a wide range of variation in intrinsic radius of curvature, and still there is a double hump structure. So this shows the there is this is means if you increase more, so the entropic entropic contribution to the energy goes and we'll get a curve like this. And if we go to lower radius of curvature, so we got a curve like this. So means there we have WLC limit a higher knot and wide range of variation in R. But in this is not seen in WLC. So this is the intrinsic radius of curvature plays the main role here. So in conclusion, we got a 3D exact calculation correlation function for 3D. And in 2D, in 3D we have only the decaying behavior. Torsion may produce the oscillating behavior. We have to check it. But in 2D correlation, we got decaying behavior if we allow either way to move the polymer. But if we constrain it by preferred direction, the polymer shows the correlation function shows oscillatory behavior. And we have calculated P of R and R using transfer matrix and Monte Carlo techniques. During the transfer matrix method, we don't use the self-averting and use the open boundary condition. And then we got P of R shows double hum behavior in a wide range of R naught. Thank you.
Okay, we've got time for some questions.
Yeah, okay, I have a question for the oscillating behavior that you find in 2D, right?
Yes.
So, have I understood correctly? If you do not have, if you have the modulus so that you can have plus or minus curvature, then you observe only exponentially decaying behavior, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you just constrain it to go one side, let's say,
yes.
So do you observe a transition between oscillating and, because you have an important parameter which should be R divided by LP, right?
Oscillating and ultimately decays the value.
So
the
there
value
is
of
a
the
transition
correlation.
Between...
No, there is no sharp transition as such.
So depending on, so for any value of R divided by LP, you have oscillations, right?
Yes.
Or
yes.
Do you have also cases in which it is exponentially decaying?
Oh, I have also cases with exponentially decay.
Okay.
In this case also.
So there you do not have oscillation for large values of R, correct?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So that does suggest that if you put the torsion in 3D, I would think it changes qualitatively.
Yes,
because
yes,
putting
yes.
In 2D, having this constraint is like having
but
a sort of torsion.
But using torsion, I think this is already done in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
They get the oscillating behavior. 3D.
Okay, and there still should be a phase transition. So what I would expect is that the 2D,
yes.
When you enforce it to go left-handed or right-handed, should be equivalent to the 3D with torsion.
Yes.
Because it's like yes. You have a torsion rigidity
yes.
Since the
yes.
Torsion can be either positive or negative, and that's yes. It. But okay. Yeah, so that's it. Yeah.
Thank you.
There's also some work suggesting that you will have the oscillating behavior and the correlation function if you have the polymer confined in a tube. So I guess this is relating to your work, since you, when you have the polymer in a tube, you would have imposed this intrinsic curvature. Or do you know these
no.
Results?
In this case, we don't have any constraint like this. It can move around freely anywhere.
Yes, but maybe, I mean, if you had the polymer confined to a tube, you would have some points, contact points with the walls, and that there you would have some kind of curvature. So,
okay.
Yeah, forced on the polymer.
I'm not getting it.
No, it's just that you will see this kind of oscillating behavior
yes,
other
yes.
In other situations like the one you described, but maybe yours is really a more general case of, I mean, a confined polymer would also have some places where it's forced to make a turn, so you would have some curvature.
Yes.
So that would maybe be a situation where your model would be relevant for experiments.
Okay.